10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And they're off. Welcome to the Triple Crown Countdown, live from Belmont Park on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming down to the finish. Rural on ice, stay thirsty at brilliant speed. It's a shocker in the Belmont. Ruler on Ice is the winner, and here comes Union Rags unleashing a final furious rally to win the Belmont Stakes by a nose over Peter.
Presented by Brisnet.com, Cal Density, and West Point Thoroughbreds.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Palace Malice. An upset winner here in the Belmont Stakes.
The tide ticking away in the Triple Crown. Commissioner down inside. Belmont's between horses. California Gold Wavering Way. Here's the wire. And it's a photo finish that goes to Toneless.
Now here's Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom, our producer Sean C., back with you at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, under gray, cloudy skies. Supposed to be a pretty good one tomorrow, though. 1 day, 10 hours, 48 minutes away from American Pharoah's Run It History in the 147th Belmont Stakes. Of course, we're going to have it for you exclusively right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And the temperatures tomorrow, supposed to be pretty darn good. 79 degrees and sunny. Should have a fast main track for that mile and a half test of the champion show. Everybody getting excited. The apron here, we are about 50 yards from the main track. The apron outside the Belmont Cafe is packed with horsemen and several people trying to get a look at the Belmont horses as they come onto the track this morning. Of course, American Pharoah will make his customary appearance shortly after 8:30 Eastern time, and we're looking forward to seeing him on the track again.
Yeah, it's always a treat to see him. Beautiful stride, great looking horse, and everybody's anxious to see him again. The apron is really filled up this morning a lot more than the last couple days. People are already out in their dresses and hats. One guy sporting a pair of shorts and and a sport coat.
Well, it's not too bad now. It's 56, 57 degrees.
Tight shorts. You sound like me.
I've never said that in my life.
Until now.
I bet you wish you didn't say it now.
Yeah. Wow. Jude had to point that out. I had to look. A car wreck. I just couldn't help but look.
Yeah, that outfit's kind of a car wreck if you ask me.
Yeah, he couldn't point out the girl standing next to him in the beautiful black and white striped dress, right?
That's right.
Well, my wife's listening. I can't be gawking over women. She'd rather me gawking over a man.
There you go.
Well, look, the excitement definitely is building. Jude, you referenced the number of people that are now on the apron, and they are horsemen, and they are jockeys, and fans just coming out to see these horses. We saw Frosted go onto the track about 15 minutes ago before we came on the air, and he looks the picture of fitness. I think he is sitting on a big race, and Kieran McLaughlin is here as well, and he's certainly hoping that he's sitting on a big one. He joined us on this show Wednesday morning, and he talked about how confident he was in him, and he feels as if that, you know, he could get his second Belmont Stakes. Of course, he won it with Jazzle, so Kieran feeling like he's sitting on a good race.
Yeah, well, he knows how to do it, so it makes you more confident, and he's got a nice horse, a horse that seems to be improving his last couple starts. His coat looked fantastic this morning, so that's a plus, obviously healthy and doing well.
He is. No, he really is. He's doing really well. Clancy just looked at me. I thought you were going to say something brilliant, Sean.
I didn't have anything to say. You got to give it. You got to hand it off.
Bugs Bunny. Let's talk about Bugs Bunny for a minute. Let's talk about Bugs Bunny.
You weren't even on the mound. Give me a break.
Well, look, 34 horses have been eligible to win the Triple Crown. 13 horses since affirmed accomplished the feat back in 1978. 11 of those have succeeded. So, you know, will American Pharoah do it tomorrow? Well, obviously the racing world, the sporting world, hoping that he will. Jeff, what's the formula for success if he is going to win the Belmont Stakes tomorrow afternoon?
Well, we've been talking about it for quite a while. There's so many, you know, check boxes that you need to have checked off to accomplish a feat like this. And as we've said before, American Pharoah appears to have all of those check boxes checked off the right way. I mean, it's not just the physical attributes, but the mental part of it too. And he's been so composed and professional throughout this whole process, and certainly even more so here since he's arrived to Belmont, the way he handles himself walking into the paddock. He knows what he's doing. He's got confidence. He's feeling good. He's on his toes. But he's also doing it the right way.
Yeah, he is. And the connections have made their way into the house as well. Owners Ahmed Zayat and his son Justin getting excited for the big run at History tomorrow. And what a ride it's been for them. They roll through Kentucky with the Kentucky Derby. Then they blast through the Preakness Stakes. And here they are with an opportunity at Immortality tomorrow. And we're going to talk about this as we move throughout the show with, in terms of the Triple Crown, where does it fit with other sports and what these other accomplishments might be, like the Triple Crown in Major League Baseball, for example, or talking about the Grand Slam in golf, which has never been accomplished, and how difficult this feat really is, because keep in mind, we haven't seen a Triple Crown winner in 37 years.
Well, I think, you know, that's just a matter of circumstance. We've come awfully close, and there's been some tremendous performances. There's been some second-guessed rides by jocks. There's been stumbles at the gate. There's been a horse that looked like he was going to win the Triple Crown and didn't even make the race. So there's been a lot of different circumstances, but we've come close, and this might be the closest that we've come yet.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen it. We've seen it blow apart in a lot of ways. We've seen horses not train well leading up to it, and you know, like a horse like I'll Have Another didn't make the race, and then we've seen questionable or inexplicable rides in that mile and a half. We've seen horses just simply get beat by better horses. I mean, I think if you look back at the year Silver Charm ran, you know, I think if he came along in a different year, he'd certainly be a Triple Crown winner. I mean, those battles that he had with Freehouse and Captain Bodge, and then Touch Gold, as good as he was, to run past him, and a great ride by Chris McCarron to do it. And, you know, we've seen them all. And in horse racing, as we always say, there's you know, just when you think you've seen it all, you see something else. So, you know, there's no one thing you can say, okay, this is why we haven't seen a Triple Crown winner. We've seen, you know, they've been so many different ways, the ones that we've come here. I mean, some blew up at the gate, some got beaten the last jump, and, you know, just – it's just hard to predict what can happen, because after seeing so many of those, it's like, man, you know, we think we know what's going to happen tomorrow, but after the things we've seen, you'd be crazy to say, oh yeah, this is what's going to happen.
Well, it's always funny to me when people say, oh, you know, the spacing and this and that, and they need to stretch it out. Look how close come. So many times, so many horses have gotten beat a nose or a half, or, you know, so it's not the spacing, it's right. Just racing. It's yeah. That's the way it goes. It's tough to win any race. It's tough to win a $5,000 claimer, you know, so winning the Triple Crown is an elusive prize. It is something that's, you know, way out there in the distance, and you have to be special, you have to be lucky, and, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow.
All right, well, of course, the Belmont Stakes coming up right around 6:50 Eastern time. We're going to have the coverage for you tomorrow morning from 8 to 10 a.m. with our Belmont Day edition of the Equine Forum Show, hosted live right here from Belmont Park. And then we're back 2 o'clock Eastern time with all that coverage of the stellar undercard on the Belmont program, all leading up to the 147th Test of the Champion. You're going to hear it only with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can check out a complete list of affiliates, SiriusXM channel information, and, of course, listen worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Going to get to a break. We'll come back and visit with Tom Bellhouse, who is with West Point Thoroughbreds. They are going to send out their talented runner, Twilight Eclipse, in the race preceding the Belmont tomorrow afternoon. That's the Manhattan. We'll talk to him about that, and we'll talk to him about this year's Belmont Stakes here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Enjoy fractional racehorse ownership with a leader. In 2014, West Point Thoroughbreds led all North American-based public partnerships with over $4.4 million in purse earnings and 11 stakes wins. Own with a partnership that has delivered premium racing experiences for over 20 years, including a runner-up finish in last year's Kentucky Derby. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtasintombasinboy.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
Joined by Coach Bill Parcells, who led the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in both 1986 and 1990. And yes, he won both of those. What do you remember about the day that you won your first race?
I just remember being excited. It's the same feeling you get when they kick the ball off in football and they put that horse in the gate and your name's on it. It's a little like football, but you have absolutely no control in horse racing. And in football, at least, you have a little bit of control in game management and decisions that are made. But it's just the luck of the draw, but that doesn't reduce the excitement. The excitement's the same, the adrenaline's the same, and when that horse goes in there, you know, you're definitely paying attention.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nearly 47,000 fans packed Belmont Park for the 139th running of the Belmont Stakes on June 9, 2007. There would be no Triple Crown at stake that year, but the 2007 renewal certainly didn't lack for storylines or historical implications. Only two fillies had ever won the Belmont Stakes, with the most recent being Tanya more than a century earlier in 1905. So when the brilliant three-year-old filly Rags to Riches hooked her main rival Curlin at the top of the stretch, the stage was set for what proved to be a true test of the champion.
Rags to Riches and Curlin, they're coming down to the wire. It's going to be very close, and it's going to be a filly in the Belmont. Rags to Riches has beaten Curlin in 100 years of Belmont history. The first filly to win it in over a century.
Rags to Riches had done the unthinkable. She had become the first female in 102 years to win the Belmont Stakes, and in doing so, defeated eventual Horse of the Year, Curlin. Her courageous effort in the 2007 Belmont provided yet another memorable moment in Belmont Stakes history.
Welcome back to Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, and the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Sean Clancy, and Jeff Bloom. We are literally trackside on this Friday morning, the day right before American Pharoah will go for the Triple Crown, and we're going to have that coverage for you tomorrow afternoon beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern with a stellar undercard that includes the Manhattan Stakes and Twilight Eclipse, who is owned by West Point Thoroughbreds, trained by Tom Albertrani. He will be ridden by jockey Javier Castellano, and he comes off of a winning effort in the Grade 1 Man of War here at Belmont on May 9th. That was his very first Grade 1 victory, and if any horse deserved it, it was Twilight Eclipse. And Tom Bellhouse is with West Point Thoroughbreds. He's with us now on the Triple Crown Countdown. And Tommy, first of all, thanks for joining us, and congratulations on that huge win last time.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was as some people said, it's a long time coming, but really a thrill for all the partners, and really it's just a great, great feeling to be associated with a horse that's now 6 years old and shows up and runs consistently in big races and really has taken the partners on an amazing journey with the Dubai to two Breeders' Cups and to get that grade one. I would be lying to you and say it was some that we needed that for his resume, you know, to give the satisfaction.
You and I were talking before we came on the air, and you indicated that when you have a horse like this that's been so close to getting past that hump of getting that grade one, and they finally do it, you want it more for the horse than anything, right?
It is true. And, you know, he ran a couple years ago in the Sword Dancer up at Saratoga, our home track, and we really thought he was coming into that race tremendous, training great. And at about this, the eighth pole, we really thought we were going to get it that day. And Big Blue Kitten just came home, I think, in 22 flat in a mile and a half race. And you just sat there and you just had to say, hey, we were second best that day. And feeling great going into his five-year-old campaign before the United Nations, who knew who Main Sequence was. And then four defeats in a row by maybe a handful of lengths, and, you know, he goes undefeated and wins Turf Horse of the Year. So you know that you're in rare air, you're in great company, but it still is, you know, for him to get that win, and I'd be lying to you at the 16th pole when Jose Lascano was riding Bill Mott's horse, and they looked like they had a little left. There was that split second of, oh, no.
Not again.
But Javier seemed to have him measured, and Javier's, you know, he's ridden the horse a number of times. He understands that the horse has a short burst, maybe almost like a harness horse in a way. You know, they had that 1/8 of a mile, the 3/16 of a mile burst where he can run with anybody. But the race that numbers-wise that he really ran tremendously, even though he finished third, was down at Gulfstream, where Imagining kind of jumped him on the backside with Irad Ortiz Jr., and they turned for home, and they went 3/8 nose-to-nose, and that's a pretty much out of his comfort level, that he doesn't want to, you know, sprint home like that. But everything went our way. It was Javier in the paddock before the Man of War, had really given it a lot of thought, and basically said Hardest Core was a horse that was coming off a layoff that ran in the Breeders' Cup, and he felt that Hardest Core was the key to the race pace-wise. And when Hardest Core didn't go to the lead, because he thought he was so ranked in the Breeders' Cup, they might, off a long layoff, they might try to raid him. And we didn't know the shenanigans that would go on the track with the horse previous to the race. But when he didn't go, Javier said, I'm going. And he sat right off of Jose the whole race. And we were lucky that day and got the job done.
Well, your boss, so to speak, Terry Finley, offered to pay for Main Sequence's flight to Dubai. I don't know if he ever had to write that check, but did you guys ever figure out how much Main Sequence cost you in purse money?
I try not to think about that. And, you know, Jeff Bloom, who's here with us today, is we had a horse named Awesome Gem, and over the years, Awesome Gem lost his fair share of photos, and there's been a lot of comparisons, like Awesome Gem could have been a $5 million winner if it wasn't for about 2 or 3 feet. So
I think closer to $10 million.
It might be.
There is some, you know, to your point, Mike, earlier that you were asking Tommy, there's something to be said about, you know, it's so gratifying, that accomplishment for the horse. Mm-hmm. After you've gone through so many tough beats, and you know, you have a legitimate excuse, if you will, or story behind every race where it could have been, should have been, would have been, and when they finally get that elusive grade one. I know, Tommy, I was watching you walk into the winner's circle, and I knew exactly the feeling you were having that whole time. And it's like, you know, the whole thing is surreal, and you're just floating. And you know, you finally get there, and you realize that, wow, this is something this horse really deserved.
Yeah, and Jeff was kind enough. He was one of my first texts that I got right after the race. And it did. It was very memorable, like when Awesome Gem won the Hollywood Gold Cup after being so close so many times. And Rail Trip was an overwhelming favorite that day. But he just... he almost clipped heels at the 16th pole, and then he came up and he got up, and it was all I could think of is, you know, some real, I hate to say validation, because I think any horse that runs at that level and gives you those thrills, he's validated. But the satisfaction level to the partners to know, you know what, our horse is as good as anybody in America.
That's the cool thing about West Point Thoroughbreds, is that you do have partners involved with your horses.
Absolutely.
It's not just Terry Finley and West Point that own the horse. No. And you mentioned the ride that the partners have gone on with this horse and where he's taking them. And that, to me, that's such a great way to get involved with owning racehorses. If you get involved with somebody like a West Point and you have that relationship with the partners, it's just such a fun ride.
It really is. And it is about the partners and the horse. You know, it was a thrill for me to be involved and to walk the horse in, but it really was all about our partners who put up the money and put up their time and their love for the animals. And when you get involved, you know, buying horses, as we know, is a very risky business, and to be involved with a horse that has had a career now over in his fourth year of racing for our colors and taking you to Dubai, taking you to the places we talked about, that's why you get involved in ownership. And if that isn't, you know, what makes you go, then get in another game, you know, buy a boat.
that reminds me of an old story, which I won't go into now, but I told the boys about it the other day. But who's the most interesting story of the partners in this horse?
Oh, you know, there's a few. I would say one of our partners has been with us a real long time, since like 2003, and he started right out of college, and he bought himself, he went to Johns Hopkins, and he bought himself a tiny piece of a very inexpensive horse. And actually, I was, as a partner, involved in the same horse. So in 2003, he got involved, and his career has grown and flourished, and now he's involved in a lot of horses. But for him to have that horse, a gentleman named Rob Masiello, and you know, there's also a doctor from Missouri who's in his 90s, and he still thinks we should run the horse on dirt. So we have some interesting conversations when he comes to Saratoga. Here we are with Tom Albertrani back at his barn, and you know, I don't understand why you keep running this horse on the grass.
He wants to run him at Fairmont.
Well, he can't seem to get by that other horse, so why don't you go to dirt?
hey, interesting strategy. I didn't think about it. You
know. That's great. That's fantastic.
All right, let's talk a little Belmont Stakes here, because the race after the Manhattan is going to be the Belmont, and a run at history, chance for our first Triple Crown winner in the sport in 37 years. Yeah. You've participated, West Point, in 4 Belmont Stakes, so you know a little bit about being part of this race. Tommy, your thoughts on the Belmont and what we're going to see from American Pharoah?
Well, it's my favorite race. I'm a Long Island kid. So my first Belmont Stakes was 1978. I was on my uncle's shoulders up on the third floor clubhouse, which I know no one could believe now. But Aladar versus Affirm. We were actually Aladar guys. We loved Calumet and the blue and red and Jorge Velasquez going up against Steve Cawthon. So having been to almost all of them since then, you know, every year there's that anticipation. You know, when you have something like this, I thought Smarty Jones was definitely going to win. I was shocked that day. In my heart, I kind of knew Empire Maker would probably beat Funny Side. But at the eighth pole, I was just, go funny, you know, just the chance to see it. And, you know, American Pharoah, I mean, he's just so impressive. But then that's your heart. And your head says he's so impressive. But every year that we come here and we think that, you know, we ran Macho again against Big Brown, Jeff, and nobody thought Big Brown could be beat. He won the Preakness by like 20 lengths, and he was just spectacular, and it wasn't his day. And so going in, I mean, it's exciting for all of us who work in the industry to have a chance at Triple Crown. It's exciting for the public. I hope it happens, just because I'm a huge race fan, and I think it would be a lot of fun. But, you know, your head says we've been down this road a lot, and those horses coming off the 5-week freshening have a huge advantage.
Tom Bellhouse, West Point Thoroughbreds, here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you're looking to get involved with a partnership that does things the right way, it's West Point Thoroughbreds. You can go to West Point TB. That's T as in Tom, B as in boy, .com. West Point TB.com, or give Tommy a call, reach out to him via email. Terry Finley as well, they're very accessible, and you'll get an opportunity to participate in these big races on Saturdays, just like so many of their other partners. Tommy, can't thank you enough for spending a little time here. Always fun to catch up, and go get it done in Manhattan, will you?
We'll try our best, and either way, we know he'll show up and give his best. So thanks to you guys. I love your show, and we'll see if we make history tomorrow.
All right, Tom Bellhouse here on HRRN. One thing we hear a lot about Belmont Park is that when riders come here, especially if they're not familiar with the track, you can get lost out there. We kind of touched on it the past couple of mornings. Well, jockey Mike Luzzi has been in two different Belmont Stakes, but he rides here all the time, and he's standing by in the on-deck circle. We're going to get to Mike Luzzi next when we come back on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's run at history in the Belmont Stakes.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at brisnet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. Brisnet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit brisnet.com/Belmont. That's brisnet.com/Belmont for the best reports for the best racing, and discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge.
The $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint, Saturday, May 30th. Evangeline Downs Racetrack is running 11 races with 5 big stakes worth $640,000. Play the $100,000 guaranteed pick 4. Bet it at DRF Bets. Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post, 4.05 p.m. Eastern. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.com and EVDTurfSprint.com.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, tomorrow, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Chocobo on the outside is the leader as the field turns for home. But here comes the Preakness winner, a Fleet Alex on his outside. And Southern Africa battles on a thrill. And a Fleet Alex just ran right by Giacomo Langham, is standing still. A Fleet Alex opening up with a tremendous burst of energy. He's 5 lengths clear at the 8 pole. Andromeda's Hero is now moved into second. Southern Africa third. Giacomo has faded. Nolan's Cat. A compelling, outstanding performance by the plucky of Fleet Alex. He won by 6 or 7 lengths. Andromeda's Hero was second by another 7. The Maiden Nolan's Cat was third. Indy Storm was fourth.
Hard to forget that day in 2005 with a Fleet Alex just dominating the Belmont Stakes. So talented, and boy, another horse that nearly could have won the Triple Crown. You remember he took the Preakness in the race before and finished, I guess, third in the Kentucky Derby, right? So he was a horse much like Point Given that we talked about yesterday, who failed in the first leg but dominated the next two.
Well, Fleet Alex's Preakness was one of the most amazing races I ever saw. He damn near fell down, turning into the stretch, and still came on and won the race. It was unbelievable. And it's a very talented horse, and he's having a good stallion career as well.
Somebody who knows a thing or two about riding in the Belmont is jockey Mike Luzzi. He is based here in New York for much of the year, and he's participated in two different Belmont Stakes, and he's with us now here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, appreciate you spending a few minutes with us, my friend.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you here. And, you know, we hear this quite often. When jockeys come to Belmont Park because of the mile-and-a-half configuration, they can get lost out there. Is that true?
Absolutely. And as you were just speaking of a Fleet Alex, and I always use that as one, a key race for anybody to watch. because Jeremy Rose, honestly, since I've been riding in New York for 20 years, probably rode the best Belmont I've seen ridden, and for a guy that wasn't here year round. He rode that race like it was a mile and a 16th at Pimlico. I mean, he really rode a good race, and I always give him credit for that. But back to what you said, yeah, you can get lost. I mean, everybody knows where the poles are, and everybody knows the home stretch. But there's a key part of this racetrack where you want to move. On any other racetrack, it's probably where you should move or make a move, and here it's not. Here you need to stall a little bit. And it's not. It's maybe a 16th of a mile between the 3.5 and the 3. You need to stall when at that point of any other mile oval, mile and an eighth oval, is when you start to make a move. So watch that. I mean, it's an interesting part of every Belmont, and I've watched every one, and I've seen some guys make some mistakes there without saying any of them. But I think that's where a mistake's made a lot, about the 3.5.
Is that difficult to have the patience to wait at that point and not make the move because you're so used to doing it at that point at other tracks?
Well, I mean, on a Wednesday at Belmont, it's probably very easy to do. But I imagine being, you know, I've ridden a couple Belmonts, and I was out of horse by that part of the race both times I rode it. But I imagine going for the Triple Crown and all the excitement and all the build-up, I imagine you might even forget to pause at that part of the race.
Put yourself in Victor Espinosa's shoes, okay? You're breaking from post 5. You're going for the Triple Crown. The horse has only been beaten once. You know he has good early speed. What's Mike Luzzi going to do?
I mean, I would put him in a good position and hopefully there's real pace in a race. You know, it's a mile and a half, but it's two-turn mile and a half when most races mile and a half are three turns. So you can ride it like a two-turn race, but it still is a mile and a half. I would get position and know in years past where guys have made that kind of little bit of a mistake, and I would keep that in the back of my head. But, I mean, you can't stick to a plan. It's a horse race. You know, all plans go by the wayside, so plan A, B, and C. Hopefully you never get to D. So that's would be my mindset going in the gate in that jockey's position.
Well, you've been in the jock's room for many of these Belmont Triple Crown attempts. What's it like being down there with the jockey going for a Triple Crown? Is it like a no-hitter where you don't talk to him? Or, you know, guys like Stuart Elliott, Victor Espinosa in the past? I mean, what's the atmosphere like down there?
It's a great question, and it's a very different kind of day when there's a chance for a Triple Crown winner and watching a jockey that you know, like Stuart Elliott's, you know, I rode with for years, and you know, it would be interesting to see Victor. I watched Kent. I mean, I was there all them days. And listen, man, you can be the coolest guy in the world on the outside, and jockeys are known to be cool, but on the inside, you know, they're probably churning a little bit, which is okay. That's competitive spirit. But it's a different kind of day. I've been here when the Belmont wasn't going for a Triple Crown, so that's more of a regular day. But when there's a shot at this and a shot at history, to be in that jock's room and be, you know, maybe I rode the race or the last race, but that day is definitely a different kind of day.
It's an interesting day, too, in that for a rider, and especially now with the way that they've structured so many big races on Belmont Day, you know, a guy like Victor Espinosa obviously is going to have an opportunity to ride races earlier on the card, and they're not just an allowance race or a maiden special weight. We're talking about grade one type races, so I would imagine that probably helps a little bit in terms of keeping the nerves overall in check. And correct me if I'm wrong, but once you get on the back of the horse, that's when things settle down for you anyway. So
absolutely. And I've heard other athletes say it about, you know, all the build up to the Super Bowl. Once you get on the field, Stanley Cup, once you get on the ice, World Series, once you get on the field as well, is where you're most comfortable. And I've experienced myself. I've ridden some favorites and big races where, you know, you get the butterflies, but when you get that leg up, it's, you know, you're in your zone. It's your time now. And as far as riding races earlier in the day, it's great. It's, you know, it's part of a routine. I would hate to just have one mount, the Belmont Stakes to win the Triple Crown. I mean, that's, you know, a long time to wait to ride that race. So it distracts you from probably that race. It gives you a little experience out on the racetrack. You know, we watched Victor do it at Pimlico, and I seen him ride a race, and I said, man, that was a ride, you know, where I ride the favorite in the Preakness, you know, two races from now, and it was interesting to watch, but to ride earlier races is good experience.
Victor's going to ride the Brooklyn for Bob Baffert a mile and a half earlier on the card. Do you think that's a little bit of an edge for him to actually be able to go out there and take a tour of that mile and a half race before he rides the Belmont?
Awesome. Absolutely. I mean, I went to Brooklyn 100 years ago for my grandfather, but it was at Aqueduct. So that race touches me a little bit. But it's here now. But to ride a race a similar, you know, distance, I mean, everything is a big, big plus, especially here, especially at that 3.5 mark. You know, maybe he might learn something in that race that he'll take to the Belmont, which is a good thing.
Talking with jockey Mike Luzzi on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, you were telling me before we came on the air, your son, 18 years old, was out here galloping horses this morning. Not quite ready to take the step to be a jockey quite yet, but he's getting there. And you told me that's about your worst nightmare, isn't it?
Well, I mean, at one time it was. And as you know, I've been hurt since November. And at first, when he first told me he wanted to do it, I said, man, I wanted him to go to college. I wanted him to away from the racetrack. And you know, as time went on, I could see in his eyes that's all he wanted to do. And you know, my brother, and he had the look of my brother when I remember being younger. My brother was going to be a jockey before I was, and he has this, you know, that same look in his eye. And he's a good kid. He's really doing a good job. He works for Karen McLaughlin, so he's got a little interest in that gray horse that's running in that big race. So he's doing good. He's not quite ready yet. He's got some more learning to do. He's real light. He weighs like 100 pounds, so he's no rush to get to the races because he'll be little. So some guys have to rush because of the weight thing. It's going to be galloping horses at Saratoga all summer. It'll be interesting. I still don't know where I'm at right now, so we're still kind of waiting to see what the doctors say I can do and can't do. So it'll be fun. It'll be a good summer.
What's your advice to him? I know you must give him some advice, but if you give him a couple points, I mean, you absolutely have to know to be a jockey.
Oh, man. I mean, it's such a learning process, and people don't realize it. Every day you can learn something new. And he's a question asker. But just recently, and Artie, that Karen's assistant, he's kind of my buffer. I kind of, like, put him in his hands, but he still comes home with me every day, of course. But he asked me questions that I know he knows the answers to already. So he's at a point now where he's testing me to see if I know things. and it's, you know, he's real sharp like that. So he's learning a lot, not just from me and not just from the horses. There's people in his ear. And I told him to take everything in and use everybody's opinion, not just mine.
Well, I know you have to go get him over to school right now, so we don't want him to be late for class. So
not at all.
We'll let you go do that, and Mike, really appreciate the time, and hope you get back here soon, my friend. Look forward to seeing you again.
Cool. My pleasure, guys. Thank you. Have fun.
Mike Luzzi here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet, and pretty cool seeing his son maybe make it to the jockey ranks. And when you hear him say that, he is a question asker, and he wants to do this, and he has that look in his eye. There's no doubt that someday there's going to be another Luzzi on the racetrack.
I can totally relate to what he was saying, and Mike knows, you know, being a jockey is a unique thing, and it does require an incredible amount of what I call pure passion. And, you know, my parents saw to me at a very early age, I mean, you know, wait, you want to be a jockey? What is that? Well, you know, how do you do that? And you know, they tried to deter me. They tried to do things prevent me from going down that path. But, you know, it's like Mike said, you know, you see it in his kid's eyes, and if that's what he wants to do, he's going to do it. And lucky for him, he's coming up in a great program, and so that's going to really help polish him off. And you know, with a journeyman rider like Mike at his side, I mean, you got to think this guy's going to be positioned to have a pretty successful start.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was thinking about what I would tell my son, and I'd tell him not to do it, whatever he does. But but I would just tell him, look, if you're going to do it, be committed to it. You know, there's nothing worse than being half committed to something, and especially when the danger of being a jockey and the commitment it takes, the dedication. And, you know, if you're going to do it, do it. Do it 100%. Get your weight right. Be healthy. Take care of yourself. You know, be polite. Go meet the trainers. Try to get in the right positions. But boy, don't do it half committed. I mean, just that's the worst thing you can do. And I've seen jockeys in my career. I've saw jockeys ride that were just half, you know, half committed to it. They'd get to the start. They didn't know how far the race was. And you'd be like, man, what are you doing out here? You're doing this game and you're not putting everything you have into it. I mean, my God, go do something else. There's things you can do half committed, but not being a jockey.
Every father says that when we do our Jock Talk show on Tuesday nights. I always love to ask that question. You know, what was that like when your son came to you and said, Dad, I want to follow in your footsteps? And it's somewhat flattering, but every jockey, as a matter of fact, Javier Castellano came by yesterday after we finished this program, and I was talking with him. His young son, Brady, absolutely loves horses. He has two daughters and he has his son. But his son is just completely tore up with horses. And I said, Javier, is he going to be a jockey? Would you want that? And he didn't miss a beat. He said, no, I do not want him to do that. He said, but if he decides to do it, I'm going to be very supportive and I'm going to do everything I can to help him. But I would really try to steer him in a different direction.
Here's the thing. It's an incredibly dangerous occupation. And any jockey who's ridden for any amount of time knows just how dangerous it is. And the pressures of weight, you know, fortunately for Mike and his son, it sounds like he's light, so that's not an issue. But, you know, there's a lot of challenges that face a jockey, and that's ignoring the business aspects of it. So, you know, like Sean said, you know, you want to just have that 100% commitment and focus. But you know, it's one of those things. There's nothing like it. And anybody who's ever ridden races, that's why you see so many guys that go into retirement come back so many times, because there's nothing out there that comes close to giving you that thrill and simulates that kind of an experience.
Yeah, I always laugh whenever I'd see somebody retire. Tony McCoy, greatest jump jockey in history, won 4,000, over 4,000 jump races in England. I mean, he's a 20-time champion, 20 years in a row, champion jump jockey. And I kept reading his quotes, and he said, yeah, I don't know, you know, I don't know what I'm going to find that's going to replace riding races. But, you know, and I said, well, that's where you're wrong already. It's never going to replace riding races. So come up with something that might, you know, give you some satisfaction, but forget about replacing riding races, because there is no thrill like it, and you'll never replace that. You just have to find something that at the right time in your life that will fulfill you and move on from there.
All right, the racetrack has been harrowed. We are in the break. That means American Pharoah will make his appearance on the track in just a few moments, and then Bob Baffert is going to hold a press conference with the media. It will be his final press conference before the Belmont Stakes, and we're going to do our best to bring you that press conference live on the program here this morning. It is set for right around 9:30 Eastern time, so you will hear from the Hall of Fame trainer after American Pharoah's final appearance on the racetrack before he takes a run at history tomorrow afternoon in the 147th Belmont Stakes. Also going to remind you that you will make sure that you join us this summer for Saturdays at Saratoga. It's a brand new series we've created here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We will broadcast live from the spa every single Saturday to bring you exclusive coverage of every major stake, including the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. It begins Saturday, July 25th, and goes all the way through Labor Day weekend. So check out a complete schedule right now on our website, horseracingradio.net, and join us this summer for Saturdays at Saratoga. We'll take a break. We're back with more live from Belmont on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment, presented by Cal Density. Horse transportation and combines, or as some folks call it, sessions, are very stressful and expose your horse to unhealthy environmental challenges not easily detected. A healthy immune system helps to protect against these challenges. Studies have found that beta-glucan found in brewer's yeast may have a beneficial immune response, and it is present and part of all-in-one supplement, Cal Density, and is a vital part of keeping your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Cal Density. Ingredients in Cal Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit caldensity.com.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming on the turn with Seattle Slough still the leader. Seattle Slough, 1 mile and 1:38 and 4/5 now leads by a half. Still on the outside now, San Edwin has taken over. Then it's Run Dusty Run, swinging to the extreme outside Iron Constitution. In the stretch, here he comes and he's opening up again. It's Seattle Slough and he's drawing clear of the field. Seattle Slough has 4 lengths on Run Dusty Run. It's Run Dusty Run in second and San Edwin third. They're nearing the finish line. It's still Seattle Slough, and he's opened it out to 4.5. Then Run Dusty Run and San Edwin.
Well, Seattle Slough, who will forget that day? Trainer Billy Turner, the only undefeated Triple Crown winner in history, and Billy Turner took the time to join me on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton earlier this week. You can go back, hear that entire show on our website. It is an unbelievable hour with Billy Turner. He was amazing. And if you're a fan of horse racing, which obviously if you're listening to this program, you certainly are, do yourself a favor and go listen to that interview. The podcast at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. American Pharoah set to come onto the track now. And as a matter of fact, it looks like he may be out there, Sean Clancy.
Yeah, I think he's doing the same thing he did yesterday, just jogged straight off the right way and went into a gallop. You know, the first day we were here, he jogged, came by us jogging the wrong way, just jogged once around. But the last 2 days, he's gone straight off and galloping. I'm pretty sure that's him straight across from us. Belmont Park is one huge place, so it's a little hard to see. But I'm 99% sure that's him galloping down the back. Just in his typical fluid fashion.
He just glides over the surface, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you can watch him gallop, and he doesn't look like he's going any faster until you kind of train your eye to almost look at the trees behind him and see how fast he's going by the trees, and then you realize how fast he's going. You know what I mean? If you just focus on him, he doesn't look like he's going very fast. But if you focus on the background, you realize how much faster he's going. He's just such a beautiful, light, economical mover. It's amazing to watch.
Jude, are these anxious moments for trainer Bob Baffert?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, every time you send a horse to the track, you know, you hope everything works out okay, and now you've got this tremendous pressure of the Triple Crown on your back, so you just want to get through this day and have him come back and cool out well, and you know, then your work is done. I anticipate he's probably not going to train in the morning. I don't know if there's been any official word on that or not, but, you know, he's done everything right so far. So if he can get by, he just nervous.
What are you hoping to see here today? I mean, we obviously want everything to go well, but what are you hoping to see?
You just want him to be the same. You just want him to be the same as he was yesterday, which was awesome. You just want that same feeling, that same look, that same ears up, you know, enjoying himself. In our interview that you did yesterday, Bob talked about what he loves most about this horse is the horse has a good time. You just want him to have that good time. You don't want anything to happen, you know, that shows you that he's not having a good time.
He's coming through the stretch right now in front of us. Sean, what can you tell us?
Same as always. Ears up, beautiful neck, bowed. He just looks the same as he's looked all along. I mean, he looks exactly the same as he did before the Derby and the Preakness. you know, which is exactly what you want to see. You know, these races will take a lot out of horses, and you know, at this stage, you want to see signs that nothing, you know, nothing's been taken out of him. And from my view, he looks perfect. Yeah. Just as steady as a clock.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, we've been saying it all along. This horse is a special horse. You know, it's interesting too. You know, when you come out here and you watch the horses, unless you're, you know, really close up against the track, they all look nice out there and they're moving across the surface, but there's something different about American Pharoah, and it's that whole presence thing. He's in such great command. There's such enormous amounts of confidence, and for a horse that really does take a good hold and he's in the bit, it's all controlled, and he's actually working along with the rider. They're not fighting. There's never friction. It's all just in sync. It's like, I said before, poetry in motion. For American Pharoah, and you know, everything he does is just so effortlessly, and he enjoys it, and you know, we talk about all the aspects of what are the proper attributes for a Triple Crown winner, and it's both the mental and the physical, and he has those in spades.
We saw him in the paddock yesterday schooling Jeff, and you and I were literally 10 feet from American Pharoah.
Sure.
And nothing bothered him. There were several reporters and camera people around excuse me, and they were snapping pictures of him. Didn't even turn a hair. He didn't even really acknowledge them, right? And he just kind of went around once, and then they took the saddle off him. He came back again, and he stopped. You and I were very fortunate. We were on the other side from the reporters, and he stopped, and he looked right at you and I, right? And he posed for a picture. That we put that out there on HRN. If you go to HRN on Twitter, it's out there. A great shot. And
did he wink?
He did not wink. He didn't get the wink.
He did everything but wink. But you know what, Mike? I mean, I've watched this horse school throughout the Triple Crown. At Churchill Downs, at Pimlico, and now here at Belmont Park. And we're talking about three distinctly different kind of environments, not only in the location of where the paddock's at and the way the stalls are positioned, but how the horse actually gets to the paddock and what the trail's like and what kind of media frenzy is gathered around. And like you said, nothing phases this horse. He, in fact, actually thrives on the attention, the cameras. He pauses, he waits, and he does, in fact, it seems as though he's posing for his picture to be taken.
Well, Bob told us that the other day, but before he did his interview, we were talking, and he actually got a little upset with the security guard who wouldn't let people, you know, get their pictures and stuff. And he said this horse thrives on the attention. He loves people coming by and visiting him. He's a ham, evidently. So, you know, this horse really seems to have all the parts, and seems like a really cool horse to be around. And so we hope he gets it done.
When you see him come through, and then you watch the other horses on the track they're training now, and it's not a knock on the other horses. It's a compliment to American Pharoah and how good he looks. But you can really see a difference when he comes by, and then you see some of the other ones come by, and you say, yeah, that's not American Pharoah.
Yeah, like Usain Bolt and then Jude Feld.
There you go. That might be the biggest mismatch in the history of sports right there.
And one of the more interesting analogies.
Doing any sport, right? He could probably beat me golfing. He might even be able to hit a baseball farther than I can. I don't know. But, yeah, that would be a mismatch for sure.
Look, he's a stunning horse. I mean, you just can't fault him. Just his attitude and his stride and physically, mentally. After the Preakness, after the party, the Stakes Barn, I had a nephew and a couple other friends, and they walked down the barn, asked Bob Baffert's groom if they get a picture. They walked in and just stood by the webbing and took pictures with him. And, you know, you can tell how cool the horse is by how cool the help is around him. The people that are dealing with the horse, when they're cool about, take a picture with them or do this or that, you understand how easygoing the horse is. And I when the Triple Crown with Barkley Tag and Funnyside, I mean, Barkley Tag, and he can be a kind of a, not surly, but he's kind of a private guy, and he can be a little bit intense, but you know, people were getting upset about Barkley's, attitude about the whole thing. Well, he was watching his horse just fall apart in front of his eyes, and he was trying to keep the media away from him, trying to keep the hype away from him. And that funny side, I mean, the people that he had this entourage, I mean, the fans around that horse is nothing like this horse. I mean, it was madness, the people around him. And I think Barkley knew that it was just, you know, it was kind of slipping out of his hands for the 3 weeks. And, yeah, he was really nervous and really stressing out. And, Jude, I mean, you know, as a trainer, if your horse is doing well, you're not nearly as nervous.
No question about it.
Well, it's not a Belmont Stakes until Sam the Bugler calls them to the post, Sam Grossman, and he's here now on HRN.
What a pleasure to be with Sean here. He's a great horseman I've ever known in my life. But you know what? It rained 15 hours straight, cats and dogs, that day. You know, nobody liked it. Okay, but anyway, hold this. This is the call to the post. This is what I play when the little men in costumes come under the track. I'll have the great Ryan Reske and the always fabulous Beth Ann Dixon walking around with me. Please come say hello. I'll play you a tune. I'll tell you a story. I make most of it up, like Walter Mitty, but. We'll have fun at Belmont Park, okay? Nice to see you, Sean.
How about
is he not the greatest or what?
Hey, little men in costumes come onto the track.
I've never heard that one before. I'm a little jealous he came up with that before me.
Wow. He enjoyed seeing you there, Sean.
Yeah, that's my, I guess, yeah.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
That was funny. It's a great, the melting pot of the racetrack. If you don't like the characters around here, boy, you don't like characters.
Outstanding, and our thanks to Sam Grossman. You'll hear him tomorrow. Sam the Bugler, as he goes by here at Belmont Park. Of course, the 147th Test of the Champion coming up 6:50 Eastern Time tomorrow. We have all that coverage for you exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can join us from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow morning. We're live from Belmont Park with a special Equine Forum Belmont Day edition. And then we're back at 2 o'clock Eastern time to bring you our coverage of that stellar Belmont undercard before segueing into the 147th Belmont Stakes. So make sure you tune us in. You can visit horseracingradio.net right now for a complete broadcast schedule, listing of affiliates, and to listen online. And don't forget to join us tonight, 6 to 7 Eastern time, for our Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview. That is our usual Friday night handicapping show. Anthony Stabile, the Big A, and the Uber capper, Ellis Starr, will be with you to walk through each and every race on the Belmont program. So you'll get a chance to listen in and see who you should bet to make some money tomorrow with the Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview. That can be heard on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206. And, of course, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. We'll get to a break. We're back with more. This is the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's Run It history in the Belmont Stakes.
Horse racing is a major professional sport where you can own your own team without spending millions to play. West Point Thoroughbreds can get you started competing in horse racing partnerships for a fraction of the cost of building a stable of your own. You don't need to know a lot about horse racing. West Point manages your horses. You show up on game day and enjoy all of the fun. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit West Point, T as in Tom, B as in boy.com. That's westpointtb.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
If you haven't already made the Horse Racing Radio Network your home for thoroughbred racing action, then now is the time to visit horseracingradio.net. Check out our broadcast schedule to see where and when we will be bringing you the best in thoroughbred racing from the rail to your radio. As always, you can listen to our free live streaming anywhere in the world at horseracingradio.net. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at twitter.com/HRRN or on our fan page on Facebook. We'll bring all the best racing information to you with broadcast information, pictures from the track, and news updates as soon as we hear it. Remember, that's twitter.com/HRRN for all the updates as soon as we hear them. Don't miss out on all the action. Get in the game with Horse Racing Radio Network today at horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
The Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint Day is Saturday, May 30th. Evangeline Downs Racetrack Casino in Opelousas, Louisiana is running 11 exciting thoroughbred races with 5 stakes events worth $640,000. And the $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint is the centerpiece of the day's great betting action. Bet big, win big. Play the $100,000 guaranteed all stakes pick four, races 5 through 8. Bet all the races at DRF Bets or at any simulcast location.
Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post time, 4:05 p.m. Eastern. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit drf.bets.com and evdturfsprint.com. Don't forget the $300,000 Evangeline Downs Turf Sprint Day, Saturday, May 30th.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, tomorrow, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tatara's opened up a five-length lead, and Big Brown has been eased at the top of the stretch. They're coming into the final furlong. Tatara is the leader by five lengths here. Dennis of Cork trying to reel him in with one furlong to go, and Tatara ducks out. Now he ducks in, desperate for the final 16th of a mile, but he's going to do it here. Here's a shocking wire-to-wire win in the Belmont Stakes at 38-1. It is Tatara. He wins by four lengths. The Triple Crown will remain vacant once again. Dennis of Cork finishing second is close for third, and very unfortunate, a desultory Big Brown has been eased in the stretch.
Tom Durkin with the call of the 2008 Belmont Stakes. A desultory Big Brown eased in the stretch.
That is not a word you want to hear at any race call. It's certainly not a Triple Crown call.
Remember that day. And I thought Big Brown was a sure thing. Jude, I know you did too. We didn't think that he could get beat in that race. There was no possible scenario where he could get beat. But guess what? There was.
We loved Big Brown from the first time he won a race at Saratoga, and we loved him all the way through the Triple Crown. And he was an amazing horse, a very talented horse, and we were on him all the way. All the way we were on him.
And by the way, Deterra, trained by Nick Zito. We talked about this yesterday. Nick Zito, his two Triple Crown victories. Sam the Bugler.
It does that for everybody?
I thought we were exclusive.
I thought that was exclusive.
What's going off this morning?
Let's see if we hear the little guys in the costume line or not.
We don't use that same line again. What would
you think of that, being a former jockey? Little guys in costumes. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I thought he was talking about there's a bunch of buglers out there wearing that same costume he has on.
Those jockeys, we didn't pick up on what he was talking about.
He looks like he should be standing in front of somebody's house.
Well, we got a big guy in costume here. That's the Big A. Anthony Stabile, who not only showed up for the show this morning, but he's been promising me cannolis since I got to New York, and he said these are the greatest cannolis you'll ever have. Well, he didn't disappoint. I didn't expect to see them, Big A. I got to be honest with you. I didn't think I was ever going to see the cannolis.
Well, a half a dozen of them didn't make the ride over from Howard Beach, so I don't know what's left of that. There's some carnage on the 8.5-mile ride.
All of us are splitting one cannoli, it sounds like.
I don't know what it is with cannolis this trip, but I've eaten more Italian food since I've been in New York, right, the past 3 days. And we were at dinner last night, and the waiter came over when we first sat down, and he said, okay, now I need the horse numbers. He knew we were with Horse Racing Radio Network. He said, now I need the horse numbers. And he threw me a blank piece of paper, and he told me to write the numbers down to bet on in the Belmont. So I did. I wrote three numbers down, right? Well, then he brings our dessert over, and he brings four cannolis. And on the plate, in chocolate icing, he wrote the number 5. So I got a little tip from the waiter. He said, number 5 in the Belmont, and it came in the form of cannolis. How about that?
Yeah, Mike was so gracious. He gave him American Pharoah over frosted and materiality. Like, this poor guy needs him to give him chalk over chocolate. The Uber captain would have been very unhappy with you.
Frosted kind of goes along with the cannolis, but while we're talking about food, I want to give a shout-out to Kevin McGee, who has a place called Holiday in New York City. And my daughter Ryan and I went there last night, and he just gave us an absolute feast. It's a great little bar. There's fantastic crafted cocktails, and you've just got to go hang out at Holiday Cocktail Lounge in New York City. So we loved it, and it's a really cool place. It was closed for about 3 years, reopened, new menu, new staff. Everybody's very friendly in there and a really cool place to hang out.
There's no shortage of restaurant talk when you come to New York City. There's some horse racing mixed in, right? You know, we can talk about the horses. But the reality is you come to New York for the Belmont Stakes, and there's definitely going to be a lot of talk about the food that we're all enjoying while we're here.
Had a great steak at Texas Roadhouse the other night.
Yeah, unless you go to Chili's at Texas Roadhouse. In New York City.
No. The best.
That was my one non-Italian meal.
The best was our producer, Chauncey, talking about Mike Pena's Disneyland, going into Times Square, and you've got Chili's, TGI Fridays, Olive Garden.
That might get me to the city. I won't go to the city, right? The city scares me. I'm not going to the city.
Olive Garden will get
too much traffic.
The greatest city in the world. That's what you're telling me. By the way, it's the most popular Olive Garden in the world.
In
New York
Times
City
Square?
Olive Garden, the Times Square Olive Garden is the most profitable Olive Garden in the world.
Well, Italian food.
That's like absurd. Because of people like you.
That's absurd. Hey, he didn't do this version for us.
Here goes Sam again.
Sam the Bugler.
Give a guy an opportunity.
Yeah, we should never open that window. Should never open that door for Sam the Bugler. Well, American Pharoah has completed his final preparations. He was on the track just about 15 minutes ago. Hall of Famer Bob Baffert is going to hold a press conference right around 9:30 Eastern time. We're going to do our best to bring that to you live here on the Triple Crown Countdown show. And that is going to be his final press appearance before tomorrow's Belmont Stakes. So looking forward to hearing from Bob, getting his thoughts. We thought American Pharoah looked spectacular this morning. And Anthony, it'll be interesting to hear if Bob feels the same way.
Yeah, it sure will. I had my eyes on a bunch of cannolis and fruitadels while he was on the track and on my way over here. But, you know, that's the impression he seemed to have given when I was here with you guys Wednesday morning. He looked real well on the racetrack. And, you know, he's not, unlike some of the past horses, like Big Brown, who started falling apart, especially with that foot, Smarty Jones to a lesser extent, he physically started going the wrong way, in my opinion. It doesn't appear like if American Pharoah fails tomorrow, that'll be the reason.
Doesn't it seem as though, and those, you... It's a great point you're making, is that these kinds of races, they take their toll on these young horses. You know, it's the time frame and the rigors of travel. Yet with American Pharoah, I don't really recall, at least for the last 25 years, a racehorse coming into a race like this who actually seems to be getting better. He seems to be stronger. His coat looks shinier. He looks healthier.
Yeah, he's come along great, and he seemed to have withstood the rigors of this trail so far. He's got a mile and a half left, and I know there's a lot of people out there that think that don't think it's going to be a problem. I'm not one of them. I think he'll have his hands full tomorrow with Big Sandy and the seven others that are going to try to unseat him as the champ right now. But, yeah, he certainly seemed to have come through here. You know, and it seems, guys, like something happens to these horses, physically or mentally, somewhere along the way. Like Funny Side, I have the luxury and the pleasure of being around Funny Side during his run in 2003, and while physically he withstood the 6 and 7 weeks leading up to the Derby and through the Preakness into the Belmont, physically we stood up. Mentally he was shot by the time Saturday rolled around. That work Tuesday morning before the race, 57 and change, he came on the tracks, you saw the racetrack, you saw the white of his eyes, and he was raring to go, and he was hard to settle down for the whole 3 weeks between the races. And you know, more often than not, that's a bad sign.
I mentioned that we were going to talk about where this feat, pulling off the Triple Crown in horse racing, stands against other sports and other sporting feats. And Jenny Reese of the Courier-Journal put together a poll, and she listed different accomplishments in different sports and how this might compare. So let me read these to you, and you guys can kind of kick this around. Of course, baseball, we talked about that. The batting triple crown of average home runs and RBIs, last achieved in 2012 by Miguel Cabrera. Before that, you had to go back to 1967 and Carl Yastrzemski. It's been done 17 times. Basketball, an unbeaten men's NCAA champion, last achieved 1975 by Indiana, 32-0. Before that, it was 72-73 by UCLA. It's been achieved 7 times. The basketball NBA version of it. How about an averaging a triple-double for a full season? It's only happened once. That was Oscar Robertson, who achieved it in 1961 and 62. We talked about the men's Grand Slam in a calendar year of golf, winning all 4 majors in the same year. An unbeaten Super Bowl champion, the Dolphins, the only one to pull it off in 1972. They went 17-0. And then tennis. You can throw tennis into the mix, too, with singles grand slam in a calendar year. In men's, it was last accomplished in 1969. It's been accomplished three times, and in the women's side of things, also accomplished three times. Steffi Graf did it most recently in 1988. So where does horse racing and winning the Triple Crown, not having it had it accomplished in 37 years, where does that fit among those others?
It's tough. I mean, it's as tough. It's probably tougher than all of them, as we can see. I mean, I think when you look at the variables in horse racing, you know, I always say, like, the American Pharoah, as good as he is and as good as he's doing, he doesn't even know it's a mile and a half. How would he know it's a mile and a half? We all know. Hey, this is the longest race of your life, pal. He doesn't know that. He's going to know that about the eighth pole. He's going to say, wow, I've never been this far. So, you know, you're dealing with an athlete. The star of the entire show doesn't even know how many innings the game is. He doesn't know if it's a best of seven. He doesn't know if it's 18 holes in a round of golf. I mean, you're dealing with a living, breathing creature that doesn't even know the rules of the game. So yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it's totally different than any other sporting event.
My old friend Josh Shelley, who was a great handicapper, he was also an actor and a director. But somebody would say to him, can this horse go a mile and a half? And he'd say, he's going to have to.
They'll all go a mile and a half, right?
Yeah.
It's just how fast.
How fast do they go? You know, and Jude, you talked about this yesterday. You know, people really don't appreciate or understand what it takes just to get a horse to the races. And then you get him to the races and to win a race, what an accomplishment that is. And then to win at this level. And you know, the best horse doesn't always win. There's so many variables associated with winning a horse race, and to do it successively multiple times in a row against these kinds of horses, you have to overcome so much adversity and so many challenges and so much thrown at you. But, you know, to Sean's point about, you know, this horse, he's going to go out there. He doesn't know how far he's going, when he's supposed to pull up, whatever. American Pharoah is different. He kind of gets it, you know. He just seems to have that look in his eye, and he kind of, you know, I know what I'm doing here.
You think he knows it's a mile and a half? How would he know? How would he know? He's read it. He's listening. I mean, how would he know?
He's on Twitter.
I think somebody told him.
I mean, I think he's a brilliantly smart horse, but there's no way he knows how far the race is. How could he know?
I'll say one thing. I've been fighting the battle of the bulge my entire life. We joke around about the cannolis, but I have. And one of the guys that always tried to get me to lose weight was the late, great Alan Jerkins. And I've walked around this racetrack more times than I care to remember with the Chief, when the Chief was around. And I was about 12 years old, and he took me around here. I think it was 89. And he took me around here, and he stopped me at the quarter pole. And he looked down the stretch, and he goes, can you imagine having traveled all these miles and prepped, and you know, this is 25 years ago when they had four or five preps before the Derby. Horses had 12 races under their belt before they got to Louisville. He said, could you imagine all the preparation you do in the year? You get here and you get through the Belmont, the Derby, and you get through the Preakness, and you have to deal with this. And you just look down from the quarter pole, and it might as well be from here to Shanghai. And do they hear us in Shanghai?
Yes,
yeah, sure.
Okay. So, we're big in Shanghai.
For you Shanghaians, that was a shout out for you guys. That's when American Pharoah will find out it's a mile and a half. When he gets to that quarter pole tomorrow and he says, where did this come from? And
yeah, we have a feature on our broadcast tomorrow afternoon that people will want it. It's worth tuning in just for that feature. It's the final furlong of the Belmont Stakes, and it tells the story of horses that have come to that final furlong looking good. Horses like Real Quiet and even Smarty Jones, who looked pretty good coming to that final furlong, and all of a sudden it hits you right between the eyes, and you realize, wow, this is the test of the champion.
Yeah, and you know, it's been the undoing of a dozen. A Baker's dozen, if you count. I'll have another who didn't even make it onto the racetrack. But yeah, that eighth pole is where it really all happens. And I don't think that'll be the case tomorrow. I think he'll be long gone or vanquished by the time they hit the eighth pole. I don't think he'll be around. He'll either be 10 in front or he'll be backing up. I don't think there'll be any drama at the eighth pole tomorrow. There'll be 90,000 people completely getting ready to turn this place into bedlam. Or there'll be a lot of disappointed people here.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's trainer Dale Romans walking by. Yeah, absolutely, I want you. Yeah, Dale Romans came up to me at the Derby And we hadn't asked him for an interview all week long. And Dale Romans has been a longtime supporter of this show. And I had my recorder with me. I had my HR microphone with the mic flag on it. He stopped me and he said, "You didn't even ask me for an interview this week. I don't think I'm going to give you one now." And I said, "Okay, fine." So he was one of the first people I contacted here at Belmont. Of course, he's giving me a hard time. One of the first people I contacted at Belmont, I said, come on on the show. This is yesterday. Come on the show. He said, "Okay, I'll be over in 5 minutes." And then he left and went back to the barn and never showed up. So now he just walked by and Big Lee just again. I think when he comes back after the horse goes to the track, we should tell him we don't want him.
I don't think he saw the cannoli box.
He saw the cannoli, and that's why he told him you're back.
I got news for you. Baffert's press conference is going to last longer than we're on the air probably, so Dale's chances of getting on the show are two, Slimsky and Nunsky. And that's number one. Number two, he's got keen ice in the Belmont. Do we really need to interview him?
Wow. Whoa. Wow.
I thought the cannoli comment was bad.
Really. He has loved keen ice. Remember, he told us in Florida he loved this
fish. Yeah, and how much money have we made on keen ice since he told us
we've
that
lost
we
a lot.
Him? Yeah.
Okay. We've lost a lot.
I rest my case.
No cannoli for you.
I'm with the Pope. Yeah. No, he could have one. I'm with the Pontiff here. I am definitely with the Pontiff here. I think somebody asked me the other night if I had a horse to finish last. I think that's where I would go in this spot. But you know what? Those horses, he's by curling out of an awesome again mare. So he certainly has the pedigree that's going to lend them to getting a mile and a half.
Oh, absolutely.
Those deep closers, Baron, everybody thinks you want to be a deep closer because you're running at the end of these mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter races, and it just doesn't equate here. It doesn't transfer to the racetrack.
Mile and a half is a totally different
story.
Different when you talk about horses with distance pedigree, that's one thing, but a mile and a half, what horse is, I'd say, bred to run a mile and a half or wants to run a mile and a half? It's a weird long distance for a three-year-old to run.
You know, this year, last year, and again, I'm not redboarding here because we knocked it out of the park on the weekend stakes preview last year, and Ella Starr and I will have you covered tonight, 6-7. Sirius 220 XM 206, and of course streaming live right here, horseracingradio.net. We had a pretty good week last week, meaning I had a pretty good week last week. But last year, Jeff,
oh boy,
I looked at the PPs, and to me, Commissioner on pedigree alone was an automatic use in the Belmont Stakes, and he comes up and he jumps up and he runs the race of his life. He never ran a race that good until then, and he certainly hasn't run one as good since then. That Belmont, to me, is the best race of his life. He was the kind of horse, and he had all sorts of – he had three Belmont winners in his pedigree. So he was the kind of horse where he jumped out at you. There's really not one of them this year. Keen Ice is a little bit of a stretch, I think. Materiality is by a Fleet Alex who won in an 05. So, you have a couple in here that you think is going to get the mile and a half. But none of them are bred over the top to say to yourself, well, he's a must-use and everything.
Well, yeah. I think in Keen Ice's defense, I mean, he does have probably the best mile-and-a-half pedigree in the race. And that sometimes can help you as the other horses start wilting away at the end. So, I wouldn't be shocked to see Keen Ice finish somewhere in the money. I mean, he'll certainly, be traveling at the end.
You told me that you had the horse that's going to round out the exacta behind American Pharoah, if indeed American Pharoah wins. You have the horse that's going to be second, Pontiff.
I do.
Are you going to give it away?
I certainly will. Tale of Verve.
You're on the Tale of Verve. I was on the Tale of Verve bandwagon for Preakness.
Right.
I've not truly handicapped the Belmont yet, okay? I have to sit down, look at the numbers, blah, blah, all that kind of stuff. But Tale of Verve ran huge in the Preakness. He comes back and runs a big race here at Belmont, too?
I don't see any reason why the exacta won't be the same exacta that we saw at Pimlico. I think American Pharoah wins the race easily. I don't think there's a horse in the race that can touch him, and I think Tale of Verve is in very sharp form. He worked great here over the Belmont Strip. You told me Dallas likes him a lot, and I think he's going to run second. I think it's a very simple procedure.
I think if you liked him in the Preakness, you got to like him here. I mean, I said to you guys, I liked him more in the Derby, and I like him more in the Belmont than I did the Preakness, because I never seen those type of horses get a piece of the Preakness. There's kind of one gallop and clunkers who kind of keep steadying on. But I think I don't see why he wouldn't. I mean, he's certainly has shown that he can go distance shouldn't matter. His Preakness was decent. He's getting a little bit better. He's kind of a one-dimensional horse where at least you won't use him up trying to beat American Pharoah early. And you keep galloping and be second, I can see that.
And how much did the surface help him that day? That's kind of a wild card in the whole equation.
I don't think the surface mattered. I thought he was going to run huge regardless, but you're right. It is a factor because it was so sloppy that day.
You have to consider it.
Yeah, you do. But he does get the services of Hall of Famer Gary Stevens, who will be aboard for the first time. Joel Rosario, who rode him in the Preakness, is going to be aboard Frosted for Kieran McLaughlin instead. Gary Stevens, a three-time Belmont winner. He won it in 95 with Thunder Gulch, 98 with Victory Gallop, who, of course, denied Real Quiet the Triple Crown that year, and then came back in 2001 with a brilliant Point Given. And keep in mind, Gary knows both sides of this Triple Crown highs and lows, because not only did he deny Real Quiet in 98 with Victory Gallop, he was also the rider of Silver Charm for Bob Baffert in his first Belmont appearance in 1997. And of course, we know he finished second behind Touch Gold.
There's winning and there's misery.
As Bob Baffert told us yesterday, and he knows both, and Gary Stevens knows both.
That's right.
And for Gary Stevens, there is only winning.
Well, the thing, that's true. I don't want to be the trainer of Taylor Verve if he gets beat. But, you know, the thing about it is you have a horse that's in good form, and there's no reason not to embrace him right back.
All right, we're going to step away for another break, getting ready for Bob Baffert to hold his press conference here. It's supposed to happen roughly 9:30 Eastern time. We'll try to bring that your way live here on the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, celebrating 10 years of award-winning coverage.
Can American Pharoah do it? Decide for yourself at brisnet.com/Belmont, where the Handicapper's Edge will have all the top reports for New York's biggest week of racing, including ultimate past performances, daily selections, full card analysis with best bets, spotlight selections, and workout reports from Bruno DiGiulio. Brisnet.com analysis came up big for the Kentucky Derby, as Bill Finley not only tabbed the winner, but also gave out the 100-1 trifecta cold in the world's most prestigious race. And returning for the Belmont Stakes by popular demand from the Kentucky Derby are David Miller's pedigree analysis and the Thomas Herding Techniques Patterns of Motion analysis. Miller and Kerry Thomas's unique perspectives on the field are certain to give you an edge in this year's race. Visit brisnet.com/Belmont. That's brisnet.com/Belmont for the best reports, for the best racing, and discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge.
There are millions of reasons to get involved in the fastest growing promotion in horse racing and the third richest thoroughbred event in the United States, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship. Whether it's online or on track, start playing today for $2.5 million in prize money and an Eclipse Award as Horse Player of the Year. Join the DRF NHC Tour today and start planning your trip to NHC in Las Vegas. Go to nhctour.com for details.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
And it is a true privilege to be joined by legendary golfer and Hall of Famer Gary Player.
They say Frankel is the best horse, the British say that. They talk rubbish. Frankel is the best grass horse, maybe ever. Its secretary would have kicked his butt on dirt. So let's be reasonable. Say he was the best grass horse, don't say he's the best, period. It's very, very deceiving and very incorrect.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories. Join HRRN for Saturdays at Saratoga, beginning with the opening Saturday of the Saratoga meet on July 25th. We'll broadcast live from the spa with exclusive coverage of the world's most prestigious races, including the Whitney, the Alabama, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. Saturdays at Saratoga, only here on HRRN. See a complete schedule or listen online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's now Bluegrass Cat and Chazzle, and they will arrive at the top of the stretch together. And Steppenwolfer gets his motor running. He's coming on through third in between horses. Sun River's right alongside him at the top of the stretch. It's Chazzle in front. Chazzle's come from way out of it, and he's coming down to the last furlong with the lead. Bluegrass Cat is fighting him hard all the way. Sun River is third. Steppenwolfer is fourth. It's still Chazzle and a very determined Bluegrass Cat. He is determined but second to the Belmont winner, Chazzle. Chazzle won it by a length. Bluegrass Cat was second. Sun River was third. Steppenwolfer was fourth. The final time was 2 minutes, 27 and 4/5 seconds.
Tom Durkin with the call of the 2006 Belmont Stakes, and Jazzle for trainer Kieran McLaughlin getting the victory that day. Kieran back with Frosted tomorrow afternoon, and you're going to hear every single step of the 147th Belmont Stakes and American Pharoah's run at history right here with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget to join us tomorrow morning, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, for a special Belmont Day edition of our Equine Forum show. And then we're back at 2 o'clock Eastern time with all of that undercard coverage leading up to the 147th test of the champion. You can see a complete broadcast schedule, listing of affiliates, and SiriusXM information on our website, horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, this show replayed on Sirius 220 XM 206 later on this morning. That's from noon Eastern time to 2 o'clock. And then, of course, you can always listen to the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net. One other reminder, go to kaledensity.com right now and enter promo code HRRN when you order your product, and you're going to receive free shipping just for listening to the Triple Crown Countdown shows here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It's a great product, works absolutely tremendously well. You can go check it out right now, kaledensity.com, promo code HRRN, and it's all free shipping just for being a listener here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
There you go.
Can you talk now?
I can.
Did I hold it long enough for you to be able to talk?
You did a great job. This is why I love
shoving
working with
cannolis
you.
Cannolis in your
you
face.
You are such a pro. I really enjoy working with you.
That's how long it's going to take you to eat a cannoli.
The great, half a cannoli. The great Gil Stratton, one of the greatest announcers, sportscasters in L.A. history. I used to do some shows with him at Santa Anita. He was awesome. And my all-time favorite, but I got to tell you, I love working with you because you can do stuff like that. You really have a knack.
Thank you.
As you're trying to choreograph Dale Romans on
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to coordinate this here. I feel like you know, I'm bringing the plane in, you know, right?
Get this man a microphone. Don't give him the cannoli. Give him the microphone.
Cannoli's right, for look, after the interview.
So I get a hard time afterwards at the Derby because he doesn't come on the show. We didn't even extend an invite, and Dale called me out on it. And now I've invited him like three times to come on the Belmont show. And I basically had to drag you over here. What's up? Hold on. Wait, let's turn your microphone on. Sean, that would be good. Continue, my friend.
You need a little punishment for not inviting me for the Derby show. And so I had to turn you down a few times, but since you got these cannolis sitting out here, I decided enough punishment. Tammy wasn't standing around the corner there eyeballing me, I'd have one. I can have
where
a girlfriend, she doesn't care, but I can't have pizza or cannolis or anything like that.
We gotta whisk her away so you can have a cannoli.
He's here with Keen Ice. He ran a gigantic race in the Kentucky Derby, Dale. And you told me when you ran into me that day, you said, look, he's going to run a big race. And you were absolutely right.
He did run a big race. And, you know, you were focused on him because we had talked about it. And you got to watch the race to realize how big it was. If he gets through at the 3/8 pole, and Ken has plenty of room when he heads in there, and the jock just looks over, pulls down on top of him, and completely stops his progress. And he's a momentum horse. You know, he's a horse needs so. It put him in traffic trouble then, where if he gets through at 3/8 pole, he tips out the quarter, and we got a full quarter of mile run. Instead, we get checked, slow momentum down, puts him in behind horses till the 8th pole. He finally swings out, runs the second fastest last 8th of the race, passes 7 horses from the 8th pole to wire, and gallops out strong. And I don't know we were going to beat Farrell, but I know from a quarter mile run at full speed, he was going to be a lot closer, and he was going to hit the board.
I know you've been high on him all year long. You told me in Florida earlier this season that this is a horse that can really run. How much different is the game on Saturday with this mile and a half, different racetrack? How much different is this game than what we saw in Louisville 5 weeks ago?
Well, you know, you can go back and look at his form and say that you still can't see what I see. And one of the biggest reasons is the distance. The further they go, the better they go. And as you know, we only get one real, even a mile and eighth, is all we get in the last round of preps. Before that, you run in mile and 16ths or less, and it's hard for a true mile and a quarter type of horse to win those races. All we were trying to do was chip along and get points, not change his running style, and have him peaked for the Derby. And I really think he was peaked. I think he ran his best race ever, and he's been able to maintain that peak for 5 weeks. We got 4 good works in him, and he's done everything I've asked him to do. Boy just told me coming off the racetrack now he can barely hold him. He was afraid he was going to run off with him, and this is one of the best exercise boys on the ground. But he did that without breaking a sweat, which it wasn't like a nervous wanting to go. He just feels good. He's getting stronger. He just walked 3 laps around the paddock and didn't turn a hair. And I think he's ready to roll.
I don't think you'll be giving away any state secrets if you tell us what kind of trip you envision.
You know what I want? And if you look at his form, you can see how far back he's been in all his races. I don't think that's going to happen in this race, because if you go a legitimate pace for a mile and a half, he's going to go the same speed he always goes. He just gets into that rhythm and starts running. And when they, it's not that he's going to go faster, but I think they're going to be so much slower in front of him that he'll find himself 5-6 lengths out of it, possibly. And if they are way in front of him, then they're going too fast. And, you know, this is a long, long race. And so I can see him just getting in that rhythm and picking up speed and getting stronger. And it's not the fact he's probably going to really burst off and accelerate down the lane, but he ain't going to slow down. And that's the thing. How many of them could go a mile and a quarter and hit the top of this lane and still have enough to either pick it up, but much less, they just have to maintain. A lot of them won't even be able to do that.
He's got that sustainable.
He has that sustainable, and he will probably just keep getting stronger like he did in the Derby. The last eighth was his fastest eighth of the race.
Yeah, and he probably has the best mile and a half pedigree of any horse in the race.
He does have, if you analyze the pedigree, he's got the best mile and a half. The problem is American Pharoah has the second best. And you're splitting hairs to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, on surface, I wouldn't have thought that. But when you get through in there really digging around and looking at the pedigree, American Pharoah should run forever like us.
You okay with wearing the black hat if it happens?
Let them boo.
Bring it on.
Let them boo. I mean, I've said it every year that I've tried to upset is that we owe it to the past Triple Crown winners to make him earn it. And nobody wants to annoy the champion without earning it. In the sport, it wouldn't do anything for the sport if you just gave it to him. And if he's a super horse, he's going to go out there and beat us all anyway. We do know that he's the best 3-year-old in the crop, but history says it's so difficult. They always stub their toe for some reason, and so that's why we're all here.
What does a Triple Crown winner do for the sport, Dale?
You know, I always said it's more important to have a Triple Crown on the line than it is to have a Triple Crown winner. We get this 3 weeks worth of hype, the buzz that's in the air here. I've been to a World Series, you know, I've been to championship basketball, and there's a special electricity around that. And that's what you feel here on Belmont Day. When they start loading into that gate, and they're off, and the crowd roars, and it's just true electricity. It's hard to explain. I mean, sports fans have felt it. That's what's important. Now, if he was to win it, nobody knows. Like Bob Baffert said, it's a different world we live in than any Triple Crown winner in the past. What it'll do on social media, it's a great cast of characters. I mean, who's better than Bob than to carry the flag for the sport if he is a Triple Crown winner? And if he can go on, the key is if he can go on and people can get behind him and follow him all the way to the Breeders' Cup. And if they do that, you know, the Zayats,
yeah,
they're polarizing figures. You either hate them or love them. And it's Justin, everybody loves. Ahmed, you either hate him or love him. I happen to love him. He and I are very good friends. So
yeah.
I've trained for him. And we argue and fight all the time. But there's big cultural differences is all it is. One day, Justin's on the loop with us on texting, and him and I get in a big argument on texting. And there's no Justin popping in. He knows he's supposed to be referee. He calls me the next morning. He says, I'm on a plane for 2 hours. I can't leave you two Simmons alone long enough for me to catch a plane without you all fighting.
How could there be
you're like two brothers.
How could there be cultural differences? He's from Egypt. You're from Kentucky.
Yes, he's a Jewish Egyptian man that was born with a golden spoon in his mouth. Butch, he told me himself that line. And I'm a bust-out hillbilly from Kentucky. But we've really merged and become good friends. And if I don't win, I want to see him win. He's put a lot of money into the game. He supports the game at many different levels that people don't even know.
As a trainer, who doesn't want to be in the position that Bob Baffert's in? You're on the line to win the Triple Crown. But as a trainer leading up to a big race like this, how much easier is it for you not being the guy with the target on his back, not all the pressure of the media hype? Sure, people are following all the different horses, but the reality is everybody's focused on one horse. Does that make it easier for you leading up to the race?
I'm having a lot more fun than Bob is. You know, I know Bob pretty well on a personal level. He's the first person to send me a text after I won an Eclipse Award. He's the first person to text me when I walked up the stage. He's a different person than people know. He's a very kind person. I've walked with him through the biggest crowds in California, Kentucky. Never seen him turn down an autograph. Never seen him not stop and talk to a kid. And his horsemanship is equal to none. Nobody, he has no peer in this game, in my opinion. And it gets overlooked because of his antics and the way he is with the press and the media, which is just in all fun and having fun. But down deep, I know it's eating at him, and he's wanting this really bad. I mean, he's had 3 tries at it. And that's just think how phenomenal that actually is.
Sure.
And if he was to finally get it and put his name with those great trainers that have won Triple Crowns in the past, which he deserves to have his name with them.
Well, Dale, when you talk about good guys in the sport, you don't take a back seat to anybody. So I really appreciate you being here as well.
Depends on who you talk to. Ask Pammy. He's not real happy with you right now. I ate pizza and drank too much last night.
Have a cannoli. It'll make it all good.
Yeah, that's one thing I won't do today. I'll eat lettuce the rest of the day until she's happy again.
Good luck with Keen Ice, my friend.
Thank you, fellas. Keep doing your great job promoting the sport and appreciate you.
Dale Romans, one of the best for sure. And, of course, Keen Ice has his work cut out for him tomorrow trying to dethrone American Pharoah, but as Dale said, hey, let him boo if we win. Let him boo. He'll be happy.
That's right.
And it's so true. We do want the Triple Crown winner. They got to earn it. They got to deserve it. And the way they do that is on the racetrack by beating the best of what else is out there. And that's how you want it to be done.
It is how you want it to be done. You don't want to just hand it to him. You don't want to have somebody say, oh, well, he didn't face anybody. That's why he won the Triple Crown. If this horse wins, he won't face the most competition that we've ever seen a Triple Crown winner face, but he's going to be right there. I think he's tied with Assault for second in terms of the number of horses he had to beat in these three races. So if he wins, he's going to earn it. And keep in mind, all the talk earlier this season was how good this three-year-old crop was and how talented these horses were. This was going to be the deepest, most talented Derby field we'd seen. So if he rolls through Louisville and then romps in the Preakness the way he did, and then he comes back here and takes care of business against some fresh horses, mind you, who skipped the Preakness. How can you say that this horse doesn't deserve to be a Triple Crown winner?
I don't know if anybody's going to say that.
you beat who shows up. I mean, that's this game. It's whoever shows up, you beat. And he's done it so far. I mean, look at Dortmund and Firing Line. You know, they were all close in the Derby, and they went to the Preakness. It was like the showdown of the three in the Preakness. And, boy, we haven't uttered their names since the rainstorm at the Preakness when Dortmund and Firing Line went home to California, and that was the end of them. We'll see them in August, but here's American Pharoah still going strong. So, it's an interesting group this year. I don't think it's not, you don't see any big stellar, I'm not sure there's any real wild cards coming into the Belmont that you kind of maybe know who they are and what they've done. But look, the horse has done it so far, and, he's got to prove it tomorrow.
We're going to get to one final break. When we come back, Bob Baffert will be coming to the podium, his final press conference for the media. We're going to have it for you live right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay with us. It's the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for American Pharoah's Run It history in the Belmont Stakes.
It is time now for our weekly Keeping Your Horse Healthy segment presented by Cal Density. Probiotics are viable live bacteria added to the feed as a supplement to aid in digestion. Prebiotics like inulin are ingredients added to the diet to promote beneficial bacteria, which are in and naturally occur in the gut. Inulin, a soluble fiber, is a natural way to keep your horse healthy. Are you mixing possibly incompatible separate products for hooves, attitude, coat, muscle mass, and gut health? Time and money are valuable resources, and you can save both with one scoop and done for under $2 a day with Cal Density. Ingredients in Cal Density are proven to increase bone density and hip height in yearling horses, according to university studies. Vets can prove it, horsemen can see it, and winners know it. Visit caldensity.com.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Can American Pharoah become the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years?
Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby! And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness!
Find out here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Belmont Stakes, tomorrow, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for affiliate information or to listen live.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
and Silver Charm has taken the lead as the field approaches the top of the stretch, but his arch rival Freehouse is right there to his outside. The stage is set. Touch Gold swings into action on the far outside. They're at the top of the stretch. It is Silver Charm, unwavering, holding on tenaciously to the lead. Freehouse is right there with him. Touch Gold driving on the outside in the final furlong. Silver Charm holding the lead. Here comes Touch Gold and Freehouse. Silver Charm has lost the lead, and Touch Gold will deny him the crown by a heartbreaking half length.
Welcome back to the Triple Crown Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jute Feld, Sean Clancy, Jeff Bloom. We are here at Belmont Park getting set for American Pharoah's run at history. Bob Baffert is going to address the media in just a couple of moments, but the Zayats have just stepped to the podium now. They're talking about their Triple Crown hopeful, American Pharoah. Let's listen in.
37 years of a drought in this industry. 11 horses only won the Triple Crown. We'll hopefully be looking at the 12th. But coming in feeling that you really have a real shot, and the horse is doing as well as you could have dreamt. Usually there are hiccups in this business, things going wrong, but look at him in the morning. He is full of energy. I mean, his coat color, his weight, again, things that matters, that makes a difference. After, this would be his fourth race in 8 weeks. There's wear and tear. But if you look at him, you don't see it. And that's what you want to be in if you're going to try to change history and do something that have not been done. You know, three-year-olds going for the first time ever, a mile and a half, it's a tall order. It's a tall order. But he's going in as best as he could. For him, yes. Because we know already he's fast. We know already he have beaten all these horses that is in the race. We know already that he is versatile. We know already that he can run in fast track, in off track, in monsoon. He ran in 5 different tracks. I mean, this horse does not need his track with him. Even though people keep saying, oh, Belmont, a mile and a half, different configuration, different poles. Hey, what? Okay, I understand, and I realize that I'm not underestimating that at all. But if you're good, you're good. And the difference between good and great and greatness is what we're going to hopefully see tomorrow. Because in order for you to do something, the only 11 horse in the history of the game done it, you have to earn it. Everybody keep asking me, are you mad that fresh horses stayed out and coming in or not coming in? No! I'm competitive. He has to earn it. We're talking about defining greatness, right? You've got to earn it. What do you mean? This particular surface. I can make up stuff, but his exercise rider says that he likes it a lot here. And he's moving very well on it, but he's a beautiful mover. So for me, maybe Bob is more qualified to answer that. But for me, what I'm told is that he's liking it.
I'd like to ask Bob, what you look for, what's out there for that model, what do you look for in the board this morning working out on the track?
Well, we like to see the way he looked very relaxed out there. And when he, you can't see much because it's so big, this track. So when he went by us, after going around there, he looked like he was just, you know, still his floating over the racetrack like he moves, and that means he's healthy, and so we're really happy with the way he went, came off the track. Everybody was happy, so he's still sharp, and that's what he's shown us during this whole campaign, that he's, you know, he still wants to do, you know, he's happy when he goes out there. He wants to go out there and gallop and have fun. So that's him. So he came back. He's very calm, relaxed here. The the barn here at Naira, they redid this barn. Just, I mean, he's never stayed at a stall like that. I mean, he feels like he's really hit a lick. So he must think, hey, the more I win, the better the situation gets. But he's a happy horse, and we're all excited. You know, the anxiety is starting to build up the closer we get. So next time he's on that track, it'll be in front of 90,000. There's 8,200 tickets still not sold. So what I read there. So whatever it is, the math is there. So he's going to. But those tickets, I would recommend. You might as well just scoop those tickets up. Everything looks good. And but I really think he's going to run his race, and he still needs to get some. You know, we need to get some racing luck away from the gate. Just enjoy it. There's nothing we can do. It's going to be, you know, there's some great racing tomorrow. You know, we've got, you know, you get to see Byron run. Hopefully the real Byron will show up and the real Pharaoh. So that's what we're all hoping for. And that's all we can ask.
Trainer Bob Baffert addressing the media.
Yeah, we're still enjoying it.
And you know, no reporter mics will try to fill that void, but here he is again.
In the city. And so really, I've really gotten the full New York flavor, which that's part of the fun. So I'm really enjoying this trip because everything's gone so smoothly. And so, and when everything's smooth, you really enjoy. When there's, you know, when you're a little bit hesitant, you know, you can't enjoy yourself. But I know tomorrow we'll, you know, everybody will be a little bit, you know, nervous and stuff, but it won't be like we were for the Derby. We were really stressed out because we knew that we just had to, you know, we had those two horses and really had to get it done. But this horse, what he's shown me, he just keeps on bringing it. I'm just hoping for him that, you know, he's going to bring it on again. And so hopefully he's going to do his thing. And finally we can break this drought. I think I'm responsible for the drought because I probably should have won it a couple times before. But, you know, hopefully it's fourth time. I just don't know if I'll ever. Every time I've been in it, I thought, well, I'll probably never get another chance at it. So I've just been really fortunate to have another chance. And so.
Bob Baffert saying maybe he's responsible for that drought, having been here on three other occasions, unable to win the Triple Crown.
Well,
maybe the fourth time's a charm.
A lot has to do with I'm much older now, and I'm just like mellower. And I think the you know, the I know the what I have to deal with. So I'm not so overwhelmed. And like when the first couple times I came here, when I saw the media, it was like wow, it was really like. And I just felt like I had to just talk to every one of you, you know, separately. And it was just, I was so worn out. My voice was gone. It was really, I was so really burned out when it was all over. I couldn't wait for it to be over. So, and this time I feel like, I'm trying to do as much as I can without really wearing myself out. But I just feel that, you know, this horse has come in here. It's a different vibe with him. He has a lot of followers, and it's a positive vibe. And he was a two-year-old champion. He was like, you know, he's shown, you know, it takes a superior horse to do what he's done so far. And so he just needs to bring it one more time, and we're hoping that it just keeps going.
Yeah, just one more time for trainer Bob Baffert. He feels like his horse is doing extremely well, and now it's up to the horse. There's nothing more that Baffert can do at this point. Let's go back to Bob Baffert, who is at the podium addressing the media.
You know, people look at their fortune in a different way. You know,
now, Mr. Zayat back at the podium.
Empty. For me, I'm an optimist by nature. And before, we ran three times second, and then one of my other favorite. Who'd have been the favorite? Scandaria Scratch, actually, the week of the Derby. And we've been in the business since 2006. So after you actually
win the Derby, you come and look back and say, oh my Lord, we've been since 2006, I've already run three times second and I would have had a favorite. Then I won it. So then our record looks, wow, it's actually really impressive. So it's kind of funny. Once you got that Derby off your back, you have a different perspective of your record. Remember also, we've won in 1 year, we've run second in every leg of the Triple Crown. Bodemeister in the Kentucky Derby, then in the Preakness, then we got Painter, who actually at the Belmont Stake was going wire to wire, a mile and a half, and got nibbed on the wire. So I'm very grateful. I'm really grateful. We're very blessed. We have unbelievable, nice horses. This one is special. He's homebred, and hopefully Bob always, he did it really, I mean, guys, don't underestimate bringing a horse in this shape, at this manner, after going all this campaign. For his three-year-old campaign, he came off an injury. This guy have traveled so much, have won every single race but his first race. Already five times grade one winner. In order to put this kind of mileage, this kind of travel, this kind of win and tear, and look the way he does, and carry his energy, is just an unbelievable accomplishment, win or lose, for his team. Bob Baffert, Jim, Eduardo, the extras, everything. I cannot tell you how grateful for us as horse owners and fans to have an A team with you, coming with a horse who have a chance. I can't thank enough the people who have been working here. I've said it once and twice, and I'll say it for 10 times. It's perfectionist. It's looking at every single detail. People work around the clock. Seriously, it's an amazing industry, and it takes so much, like anything in the world that you're trying to do at the highest level, at the top level, it takes a whole, not team, a whole country, this whole community here. We are very grateful to be part, small part of it.
This is Zayats Baffert addressing the media here, the final press conference before American Pharoah's run at history tomorrow afternoon. No, of course, we're going to have that coverage for you here on HRN.
And who you're running against, I think, has a lot to do with it. I think all the Triple Crown horses were, they were just superior. And so that's why they won. Actually, no, we just keep the same train schedule. If they can get the mile and a half, they'll get it. I mean, that's the way they are. And so, by the way, I want to thank you for those kind words. I might raise your train right now, if you know. Okay. But, no, it's really, it's these horses, they just tell you, their body language, I just watch the body language, and they'll tell you, you know, we know how much we can give them and how much, you know, when to back off. So, his body language says he's, you know, he's still moving well. He's enjoying himself out there. He still has a, you know, this beautiful, you want to see that nice stride that they're moving over the ground really well. So, so the rest is just up to, racing luck and, you know, another night, make sure he eats well. And, you know, and the key is to, you know, to keep the human element away from him from here on out so he can rest and relax. So, we're going to be really strict on keeping people out of the barn and, you know, no more camera photo ops because he needs the rest. Because when people come around, then he thinks maybe he's going to get ready to go out and do something. So that's very important, too. Yeah, there's nothing different we could have done. I mean, the horse is as ready as we can get him. He looks great. He's, I feel confident when we lead him up there. He's, you know, as long as he breaks well, the gate is going to be very important because this track is deep. It's can be a little loose. And so a lot of horses, we've seen them in the past, they lose their footing, leaving their step or two. It takes them a while to get going, so. You know, to me, you know, we saw that with War Emblem, you know, have to be standing well, the gate, the starter. I mean, it's, you know, there's only eight horses in there, but, you know, everything's got to go perfect. We're just hoping for everybody gets a clean break and a safe trip. But the horse is as ready as we can get him, and I really don't, you know, I can't. There's nothing I could say after the race. Like, well, you know, should have, could have, would have. He's ready to roll.
He's ready to roll. This trainer, Bob Baffer, talking about American Pharoah.
Well, I mean, if I felt that he was going backwards on us, as valuable as he is, I would just say, you know what, I'm not going to run him or whatever, but he looks really good. I try to get on Smokey. I get on him after training. I ride him around the barn area, and I just really enjoy him. He's that's why I bought him. For he's just like my little hobby to get on to remind me that I used to ride horses, and I grew up on a ranch. I used to ride every day for hours and hours. So, and really in LA, there's nowhere you can ride. So I just get on and ride around the barn area, and a lot of people look at me like, wow, you know how to ride, you know, but a little shocked by it. But, you know, I came from the quarter horse world where I used to break all my own horses and get them ready. And so I've put in a lot of miles on horses. So once in a while, that's my out. That's why, you know, I got on today just to release a little bit of nervous energy. So I enjoyed Smokey. So he's... You know, he's fun to have around the barn.
Bob Baffert, obviously more relaxed this time around than he has been in the past.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a big I'm not gonna have like a Coach Madden board or anything like that, and do anything like that. But he basically he's been riding his horse, and he'll just it's probably not a. There's 8 horses going a mile and a half. They got 2.5 minutes to think about what's going to happen, so nothing's going to happen really quickly. Well, I really think him going through it even last year, he learned a lot. I think he did a lot of things last year. He was, you know, every time I looked up, he was closing the stock market, doing this and doing that, and doing TV shows, and I you know, it will exhaust them. They're tired, and they'll work at it. So I just told him he needs to just tone it down a little bit. We're gonna have a curfew for him tonight, and so. But he knows he knows, you know, down deep that hey, if the horse is ready, it'll be an easier ride for him. You know, if he feels like if he's going to the gate, and they tell him, they get on him going to the gate, they know if they feel that power and how he'll feel going to the gate. So then he'll decide then how he has to, you know, does he have to nurse him along? Can he get aggressive with him? So once they warm him up, they sort of tips him off on what plan they'll have. Well, being that... It's a, you know, 2.5 minute race. It's going to be, you really don't know until when they hit the far turn, when they hit about the 5/8, you know, a lot of guys start moving early. So, excitement starts, you know, getting with the jockeys, and you're watching your horse, and I'm watching the body language of Victor. I mean, the body language of Victor at the Derby, at the 2.5. When he was pushing and shoving on him, that was not good. When I saw that, I was like, this is not good, you know. but the horse, he just gutted it out, and he kept him running. And so hopefully then when he turns for home, you know, you're just hoping that he's running and he has a lot of horse turning for home, and they're all going to be in the same spot. But and then if he's there, turning for home, he's right there, and then, you know, from then on, I'll just be listening to Larry Comas to, you know, he'll tell me, you know, he'll give me the body language. You know, Larry's pretty good about that. He can see so much more than we can. And and from then, it's all history. If it's meant to be, it's going to happen. So, you know, once the gate comes open, you would not... The relief, I just feel my shoulders, just the weight. It's like it's out of my hands, it's out of my control. And then then I have to explain to Jill, my wife, is he going too fast? No, he's okay. Is he going too slow? No, he's going okay. Is he, you know, it's funny. It's just nervous talk that Jill and I, we have this thing when the horse runs. We have this, it's like we're talking to each other. And so it's sort of like I can explain it to her, and then she'll look at it like I think. And I'll say, like, if I see a horse, and I'm during when they get to the far turn, like I'll always say, I scan the field constantly to see who I know the horses that I'm afraid of. So I'll see, well, who's that? Where's so-and-so? And if you see one horse that you were sort of afraid of and he's not running, like, I mean, the Preakness, firing line, I'm looking for firing line. I see him back there and said, oh, he's not running. And then you go to another horse, and who's that? That's the seven horse. Who's that? And they'll tell me who it is. Oh, he looks good. And so it's more of a conversation.
And that press conference will continue with Bob Baffert here at Belmont Park. We are just about out of time here this morning on the Triple Crown Countdown, though. Don't forget a replay of this show available noon to 2 Eastern, Sirius 220, XM 206, and podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net. We're back here tomorrow, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern with the Equine Forum, 2 o'clock Eastern time with all of our exclusive coverage of the Belmont Undercard and that 147th run at history for American Pharoah. Just about time, boys.
Can't wait.
Jeff Bloom, well done, my friend.
Can't wait myself. It's exciting.
Just no drama. That's right now, you just want no drama. Just no get drama. To the race.
That sounds like what Bob Baffert's looking for as well. His feeling of relief when they finally break from the gate, much like Billy Turner felt when Seattle Slough finally pulled it off in 1977. For our producers, Lee Delapina back in Lexington, for Sean C. with us here, for Sean Clancy, Jeff Bloom, and for the Pontiff Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. So long.
Good night, Barbados.